All right, welcome to the DevOps and IT Pros Guide Jumpstart. Thanks for attending today. Sorry for the delay on the start here, but I am David Tessar, and I have been at Microsoft for almost 12 years now. So we are, myself and Morgan, are quite passionate about the DevOps space.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, my name is Morgan Webb. I joined alongside David as a technical evangelist. We have a focus area on the platform, management thereof with System Center. It's kind of a speciality and a bit of a passion for, I think, for both of us. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of moved that across into develop operations. So what is the IT pro's role within this whole DevOps cycle? And we've been lucky enough, I think, for the last 6 or 9 months to spend some time working on that. And ideally now we're starting to lay the foundation for all the basic principles and will hopefully lead to a lot more deeper content from us in the coming months.
Yeah, yeah. So let's switch to the slides here and give you an idea of what you can expect for the day. We today have 5 modules. The closing module is a bit less in it's a short module, but we want to walk you through the kind of life cycle of an application, because as an IT pro or a developer, that's something that you're going to need to experience, and that's how we're going to kind of break up our modules here today. And then for the scope and agenda, I guess to kind of back things up, I mean, Morgan kind of hinted on it a little bit, but, you know, why are we doing this, right? And, you know, what we're seeing a lot out there today is IT guys doing their own thing. And, you know, what we're seeing is this big wall and barriers, as you'll kind of see in some of the slides up there, of the devs and the IT guys, and also a lot of confusion around what is DevOps and, you know, what kind of role am I going to play? So, you know, myself, I've worked a lot with Azure, and I see a lot of great connections. And, you know, some of you may have heard of some of the new things coming, like the Azure portal, which we'll talk a little bit about today. But, you know, we really wanted to help you out there, kind of help you wrap your head around, you know, what this DevOps thing is and how can you play an important role, because the IT guy and ops or ops person, I think, plays a very critical role in this whole deal.
Definitely. That's some of the stuff we've learned, I think, in our engagement recently with developers, yeah, at Microsoft, as well as with customers over the last 6 or 9 months, that really there is a massive role IT pro can play in all the phases from a development perspective. And so we've taken some of those tasks away. And I think what we have here as a formulation for the framework for operations fitting into DevOps is going to be taken from real world experience that we've met along the way with developers, as well as IT pros are trying to practice DevOps. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by the end of today, they'll have a clear foundation of all the basics, mm-hmm. where IT pros fit in operations, when operations fits in within the DevOps cycle itself. And we'll give a good kickstart to those on the chat today.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, we are going to be flying at a 200 level throughout the course of the day. After this first module, we'll have some demos. For this first module, though, it's really kind of setting the stage for the rest of the course of the day on what is DevOps, what does the application lifecycle management look like, and kind of what are some of the products and things that play a role from Microsoft in that space. Okay. So traditionally, right, what you're going to see in environments is a dev kind of lobbing this application, you know, over the wall to the operations folks, right? The dev guy, maybe the test, you know, does a whole bunch of things on that application, and then eventually they just say, "Oh, here, ops, just you go push into productions." Well, what does that end up happening? You know, an explosion, right? A lot of times issues happen. There's delays. There's all kinds of challenges that go on there when you do that kind of thing. And I've even seen this internally at Microsoft, where, you know, we have even our internal development teams, where somebody will say, "Hey, well, once I'm done with that app, I would be great to involve the ops guys, I guess, or, you know, UIT guy. Maybe we need to manage it." But that's really kind of that old school way of thinking. And we'll show you that more about that today. So let's go back to the slide. So in case you didn't actually believe me that is a problem, we have here a Gartner presentation about what of people in process is percentage of downtime, right? Because there we had this handoff, right, between people and personnel, and there's a process involved there. Well, if you look at this, about 80% of problems relate to people in process. Only 20% relate to, you know, hardware, operating system, network, power, disaster type issues. So right there, right, is just one nugget of proof to the fact that you know, that kind of old way of doing things is not really efficient, and that's what we're seeing, you know, in the industry. A lot of people having issues there. So what do some developers do, right? Because they get to the ops guy, and you know, they lob it over the wall, or they see delays there. What happens there? Let's go back to the slides. You know, some guys, right? And this guy I like because he kind of has that hey, I'm mischievous kind of look, right? This is the developer guy, and he says, I'm going to run our company application on some machines under my desk, and I really hope nobody notices. And so some of you may have heard of these stories, right, of maybe a rack of servers or whatever, but just this kind of that concept of shadow IT, right, where your dev guys are going and doing their own thing and, you know, trying to just really not involve you as much as possible. And what really is more likely the case is if, you know, we have somebody who you might even have, let's say, deployed in Microsoft Azure, right? Because today that's super easy. Really what you can do there is, right, just deploy straight to Azure and you know, deploy your application into really a production level environment. So what does it look like to resolve issues without DevOps? Well, traditionally what you'll find is some customer will find a problem, you know, and if it's big enough of a problem, they'll raise a concern. And maybe at some point, you know, you get a page, for those of you who still have pagers that are out there today, right? The ops guy gets woken up at 3 a.m. or whatever saying, hey, you know, stuff is broken, people can't, you know, process orders or whatever. And then what you have is this kind of finger-pointing game. You know, the ops guy says, hey, the infrastructure looks fine. It's got to be a code problem. The dev guy says, hey, there's no problem with my code. You're just deploying it wrong, or there's a problem with your infrastructure. And so you get into this game of really just pointing fingers and not really fixing the problem, right?
I think that'll be a really good understanding to have that with the people on the chat at the moment. Is that something you've experienced? Have you experienced that? Have you worked with developers? And there's a bit of a backwards and forwards, because that is a key piece that we're looking to resolve for IT professionals at the moment, is let's bring down those arguments, let's bring down those components, and obviously bring a lot of benefit back to the business along the way.
Cool. Well, you know, here we're going to see that there's also a third party involved, and with DevOps, right? It's not just Dev and Ops. You also have the business involved. So the business person, right, is in the background there saying, hey, to the developer, I need 5 more features on the application by next week. Can you get those done for me, right, please? And on the other side of the house, the business person saying to the ops, hey, you're losing this money. There's all kinds of outages going on. The ops guy is, you know, not happy, right? Because he's getting pressure from the business. He's having to wake up on the getting paged and all that. And what is he saying here? He's saying, hey, you're causing me outages, developer, with all your frequent updates. You're pushing to production, dev. Like, stop doing that, because you're blowing stuff up, right? And so this is kind of one of the dynamics that also sometimes we see that's out there, right?
And the key piece behind this is that everyone is losing out in this image.
Yep.
And as we go through the rest of the modules today, we'll kind of point out more and more around the actual metrics that impact each of those personas, as well as the pieces that are important to them. So, for example, you're impacting my infrastructure, that affects my SLA. You're impacting my business outages, and I'm losing money as a business. So all those little pieces will start to keep as a theme as we go through from the beginning right through to the closing, to make you realize how the tools, the processes all tie back into play along this way, but as well as how all three personas have a role to play in making sure this whole DevOps cycle works correctly.
Mm-hmm. And some of the things that you'll see, we'll go to the next slide here. You know, if you look at that dev guy, he's in the middle as well, just saying, hey, I'm just trying to do what I'm trying to do, and you're slowing me down. So, right, but what some of the businesses do to try and address this is they'll say, oh, we need to go hire somebody, right? This is a big problem. You know, we need a new DevOps team. Well, that's we really don't believe that that's the way to go. We believe that you have the existing staff to do that, and we'll kind of show you through the course of the day, hopefully, a lot of ways where you, within your current role, can start to do DevOps types of things, and in your organization to not have to have business go hire somebody new, right?
And we're definitely seeing a huge trend in that at the moment. Yeah. Adverts for a DevOps engineer, a DevOps support person, and then a list of criteria that you need to fulfill as this DevOps guy.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the list of criteria, they vary from advert to advert. So there really is no clear, concise message around you need a DevOps person. You really want your existing employees to work together to perform and work within this DevOps cycle from an end-to-end perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, let's go to this next slide here. Then the question is, well, what is DevOps? We've explained a lot of the scenarios that happen, but I like to use this analogy of the elephant, right? The idea is that you've got five different people or whatever, four people in this example, they're blindfolded, and you tell them to touch the elephant, right? And they each get to touch only one part of that elephant. And then all of them have to try and describe what is it. And with DevOps, right, I've heard all kinds of different things, right? DevOps, oh, it's a development and operations collaboration. Oh, DevOps is just infrastructure as a code. Or no, DevOps is it's using automation. Maybe DevOps is just feature switches. No, DevOps is small deployments, Kanban for ops. What, right? I mean, like, seriously, there's all kinds of things here. I mean, I'd say the best way in my mind to define it is it's a movement. Right, it really is a movement, and we'll explain more here in the next slides what really it means. It's involved, but even the Wikipedia definition, when I looked it up, I was like, well, it's all right, yeah. But not fully inclusive, right? So,
and I think what's been nice, those comments you showed alongside that elephant, those are things that we've pulled out of people we've engaged with,
yeah.
People we've spoken to. Well, what do you view of it?
Yeah.
And you get different answers, different perceptions of what DevOps really is.
Yeah.
And what's nice is we've taken all of this content and we've kind of formulated it to become a framework from internally at Microsoft and start plugging in our products and our processes all alongside of those to actually become the DevOps motion for IT pros within Microsoft.
That's right. Yeah. So let's go to the slides over here. And, the way we like to think about DevOps, and this is not just us, there's a lot of other people in the industry that have this view as well. It's three parts, right? It's about people. Definitely is about people. And if you don't have people, right, then you don't have DevOps because that's required. Process, you have to have some form of process to DevOps, right? If either of those two are not in place, like we talked about earlier, then there's going to be problems. And last is products. You know, we tend to see people that focus only on the products. Anybody who is out there who says we are the answer to DevOps by this product, they're wrong, right? There's no, like, you're doing DevOps if you have product XYZ. And that's the same goes for, I would say, for Microsoft, right? We have a lot of products and technologies that help support the scenario, but there's not like, this is the DevOps product and you use that product and you're good, right? Because you need the people, the process, and there's often a lot of products that are involved to relate and help with the whole scenario.
And that slide is a good takeaway for anyone that wants to start getting involved in DevOps, start looking to move and perform a role within DevOps. If you start to look at career advancements, job postings, anything like that, keep that slide in the back of your mind around people, processes, and products. What is that role actually being advertised for? The people you speak to, what are they actually talking about when they look at a role for a person who's going to work within a DevOps movement? If they're just saying, well, can you do these following tools? They're missing the bigger picture around the people and the processes and the culture that actually comes behind this whole DevOps movement. So it really becomes important to understand the basics out of those pieces, sign them back together for what you have as far as a career advancement goes or within your current environment at the moment, and then start to look and see how can I start to implement pieces of this movement towards DevOps.
Okay, let's go to the next slide. So there is also something that's out there in the industry, and this is a big thing of Gene Kim and Jez Humble and in a number of different books. There's kind of three ways to help, I'd say primarily with the people in the process to do that transformation. If you've read like Phoenix Project, this also talks about kind of the scenario of this, but there's a number of different books, and I think it's important to at least have you familiar with, because, you know, as the course of this day, you know, we're not going to really help you with the people and the process of this entire, you know, transformation, but giving you some tips that you might use to help in your organization. So the first is in the three ways, right? You could think about development as the business and ops as the customer. And the idea here is that you really start to understand the workflow and the streams of all of things that goes on to actually move an application from development at its source code all the way through to production. And you start to have those folks, you know, work together a bit more, right? And this may be a number of different things, like working with development to create infrastructure as a code, right? It's really making sure you understand and map out those processes and have a good first flow of those two teams working together, right? Next up, on the second way, we have this concept of the feedback and the amplification loops, right? So kind of after you get the devs and ops getting from one direction of the application kind of pushed out there in a more streamlined and understand way. The next step is really kind of coming back and getting the flow of information from operations in a quick way back to the development team, right? So the first one is kind of that flow forward. The next one is the initial flow back to the development. So you have a quicker cycle on the iterations of the application. And then the third way is going to be continual experimentation and learning. And here, right, once you have, and this is kind of a more mature DevOps organization, when you have that really good collaboration between devs and ops and you get that feedback lifecycle, what you realize is that you start to have excitement and energy there where you're failing fast, you're trying new things, right? You're pushing out new features and it fails and you're able to recover it right away and you're able to learn and grow at a much quicker pace with those iteration cycles, right? So that's kind of, you know, the three ways. Obviously, I'm really simplifying that, but definitely check out some of the books to help out with that.
And that is something that we kind of missed in the beginning. We are going to be providing a lot more content and resources for the likes of books,
yep,
for the likes of sessions, etc. So there's no need to have a quick chat on the poll now. Where are these books? Where can we get them? We are going to provide them towards the end of today so that people, yep, will have those URLs and that,
okay,
information to use.
Okay, great. All right, so the next topic is around process. So some people are familiar, and especially I'd say more operations folks, is ITIL, the IT Infrastructure Library, right? And this is a standard set of knowledge on how to do process for whatever you really have inside of your IT organization, right? Now, this is not equal to DevOps, but what you'll notice here is, for instance, a lot of these concepts have been defined for process in things that are very pertinent. For instance, change management, right? If you're going to be talking about DevOps and monitoring and things, then you need to understand changes, and you'll see how that plays out a little bit later. Also, release management. Hey, that's kind of relevant, right, for releasing software. So, you know, there's processes around there on what that looks like. Also, incident management. So, for instance, if you have problems in production or development or whatever, understanding what went on, and then last, also being able to share that knowledge between the different staff, and so that you can learn together. This ITIL really helps with, you know, some of those concepts to where you can, instead of just kind of going ad hoc cowboy, you have some ideas on how to have some structure to make things more efficient in the DevOps process side of the house for your transformation, your company.
And I think in the engagement in the last few months, we've noticed more and more developers asking us, what is this ITIL? We keep hearing it, people keep talking about it, because actually their operations teams or the companies they're working at which have operations teams are working accordingly. Mm-hmm. And so now ideally we want to map those processes back into developers to understand what operations key areas are, mm-hmm, the tools they have in place to actually work in line with all these kind of management tasks. So it's not just to understand developers. Developers are very keen to learn and understand from operations perspective what are their key areas they need to focus on that they can align when they start to produce code and move down those cycles.
Absolutely. Okay, let's keep going here. So this is the idea. How can operations really help out with development, right? There's a number of things. Accelerate delivery, right? If operations is working with devs, you're going to get your code released quicker, right? Optimizing your resources, right? I know quite a few developers that are out there that they go push stuff out there to, let's say, Azure or hardware that's inside your organization, and then they're so focused, right, on getting the code and the app to work that the infrastructure, it's like, yeah, it's just there, right? They don't want to clean it up, right? And so that bill meter keeps going, and us as the IT folks, we have a great power, right, to help with that process to provision and pull down resources in an efficient manner so that you save costs there and make things more efficient, right? Also improving availability, right? If ops really works more closer with development, then you're going to have a number of things there that's going to help you have a better SLA and not have any surprises when you get to production, especially if you're working together earlier on. And then last but not least, also, there's a number of things, surprisingly, that ops don't think about, but there's a number of tools, as you'll see here, how ops can really even help improve the quality of the code itself, right? Where even though you don't need to know any code, you still can influence positively that source code control working with your developer with some tools and setup and configuration that we have.
And before you go to that last little bit of animation, if you look at those four pillars that have been shown there, all three personas play a key role in each piece of those. The first one around accelerating delivery, benefits to the developer, fast iterations, benefits to IT Pro, they're able to cater and span out for more of the applications, and benefits to the business, they get their faster turnaround for the investment they've made. And exactly the same for optimizing resources, benefits to all three personas again. So the same as we look at all four of those and we kind of speak about operations, there's a benefit in each pillar to all three personas that would be obviously pay attention. Mm-hmm. If they're not going to work together across all of those, there'll be limited benefits for them in those different mm-hmm. cycles.
And then so last, right, if you do all those things, right, you can really see how that's going to help, like you mentioned, all three of those personas in your environment. You know, ops definitely, but with DevOps, right, it's about all three parties working together, and you'll notice, like Morgan mentioned, that there's really benefits across everybody there to help evolve your organization and use your career in your organization. So let's go to the next slide, because we can tell you all these benefits, right? But it's good to have some business case or business reasons to back that up, right? And this is just one report that's out there. There's quite a few different data around DevOps and people that are doing DevOps. One of the key findings in this Puppet Labs report is that, you know, people who are implementing DevOps practices, they improve the quality of their software and they have high performance and reliability. More specifically, you can see that they ship code 30 times faster and complete deployments 8,000 times faster than their peers. Right? So if you're talking about your business being having a leap up on the competition, right? It's pretty important, especially those multipliers that you make this transformation, right? Also having 50% fewer failures and restoring the service 12 times faster. That's a pretty big deal, right? No matter really what industry you're in, having those better SLAs. You know, there's also a number of different tools that are here. You'll notice here that they don't actually list specific tools, but it is something for you to think about. Does my organization have tools roughly in these categories, right? Like for instance, oh, we're not doing change management at all. Well, 78% of the organizations have configuration management and 68% have some kind of ticketing system. So, you know, you can try and fight the system or embrace it, right, and make it work for your organization.
And sometimes those questions are not answered because the developers don't understand the infrastructure tools that are in place.
Yeah.
Why? Because they don't have that conversation across the wall.
Yeah.
So just a quick meeting, quick chat. Let's understand what components we actually own as a business. What are these tools do we have and can we leverage? And then start to move that into the actual cycle of our benefit as developers.
Cool. So we'll go back to the slides. And, you know, there's a number of things, too. I would say if the process side of the house is really slowing things down, then you need to start trying to tweak and do things differently. Because, you know, as the ops guy, you should not be the blocker, right? And this is a case that's presented in a number of different books. You know, process should actually help, right? One of the analogies that I remember reading is like, look, you wouldn't take a car, you know, or a train, let's say 200 miles an hour without rails, right? you need a track to help you move faster, right? It's actually going to help you be more efficient in the overall cycle of things. First, we also want to cover briefly here some foundational DevOps terms. Not going to dig into all these, but you know, if you know, this is another case for why you need to have measurement. Right, you need to have some process. You need to have some ways to understand, were we successful? Right, mean time to detection. How long did it take us to detect things? Mean time to failure. How long was it before we failed? You know, and then how can you resolve things a lot faster? Also, this notion of continuous delivery with automated testing, continuous integration and deployment. Those are concepts that all help with some of the metrics there. But just so you kind of have an idea of the importance of that, and then. You know, we also have, right, some essential questions for operations in the planning phase.
Definitely. I mean, looking at these questions now that we have set up on the slide deck, keep in mind the earlier slide with the kind of definitions that we had refers back to the metrics, the SLAs for all the three personas that are involved. Those would be kind of the acronyms we pull through. But as we start to do that, what are the key questions that operations people can actually ask? So do an honest sanity check in for yourself in your environment. So when does application development actually start? When does it start in my business? And ideally at that stage, we need to start engaging with developers to understand from their perspective, when is their starting phase? Do they get together with a business analyst and decide how to formulate the package up? What is the application going to look like? What services are going to be used? If that's the case, we kind of want to start being involved in that piece in the beginning as well. And we're going to expand a little bit more on that as we go through the next two modules about how you should start to fill and play a key role as an IT pro in that planning section before development actually starts. And where is this app eventually going to live? When we see our framework, we'll get a full view of all the different phases you can move through and understand is my app going to sit on-premise? Is it going to be public? Is it going to be at a service provider? Based on those questions, we start to understand the metrics. We have to understand the costs associated to hosting those applications, as well as what it costs to support. Because once that application is rolled out and pushed and operations look after it, someone has to look after consistently the availability, the uptime, as well as the resiliency of that application. And the other couple of questions become personal questions based on the environment you work in, the legislation, the compliance you might have to subscribe to. So does the app have any sensitive information I need to be concerned about, look after, protect, possibly split away from where I'm hosting the application? So all these kind of questions that you see on here become very important for an IT pro to start asking. And where should I ask these questions? In the planning phase? Is it going to be in the develop phase? The release? Are we going to move forward? And where all these phases, where have they actually come about from? What are they actually meant to be used from? And I know the next slide, if we can jump back to the slides again on Dave's machine then, really starts to frame these phases, Dave. Yep. And that's a great image you picked up, and I'm glad we've kind of formulated the day around that. So if you want to lead us through the couple of pieces.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So to give you an idea, we mentioned planning in the previous slide. This gives you an idea of what that is, right? There's the standard definition here. This is the Gartner view. And we want to show you, that it's not just us that has this definition of application lifecycle management, or ALM for short, right? But in the planning phase, this is planning out what is the app we have, what are some of the specs, right? It's very early. This is probably before you really even start coding. Right, and so even at this early phase of the game, the operations folks should be involved.
And at that piece as well, traditionally the business analyst is there,
yeah,
guiding the developer, yeah, saying this is how the app should look. I want 3 green buttons.
Right.
I want a giraffe over here.
Yep.
And he goes away and starts to create the code.
Yep. Yep.
But those two personas have not met with IT at any stage.
Right.
And so that's the message we want to start changing in the planning phase.
Yep. Okay. And then next you have this development and test. Now there are tons of different types of tests. And as an IT guy, I really don't think, or an ops person, you don't necessarily need to understand all of these tests. So you can have a sigh of relief here. We're not going to cover all of those tests. I think, a couple tests that are relevant are load tests, right? Pushing a load on the app because you're doing things like scaling, and then doing things like availability testing. Those are pretty straightforward, but a lot of the other tests, right, you're going to allow the dev guys to work with, but you still need to be aware of where that fits in the lifecycle. And then also, of course, we have a operate kind of phase where you're analyzing and monitoring the application after it's been deployed, and then a release phase as well. So you kind of have plan, develop, test, release, and operate that application for that full life cycle.
And really, that's what we've used to base today.
Yeah.
The same message our developers are getting from our developer colleagues within Microsoft. So those 4 areas, those generic terms that we've kind of started to provision and use within application lifecycle management, that's going to be the foundation for us going forward in our IT pro conversation.
Yep.
Very much same way the developers are getting that message across from our developer evangelists and program teams on the other side.
Yeah, it's a really industry standard type of terminology that no matter who you talk to, they should kind of understand these concepts, which is how we've broken the day out. If you also snap back to the slide, you can see that we have this broken down in our own kind of graphical way, but really, right, this is something that everybody should be familiar with, in just the idea of what goes on it and what area.
And I think to set context for the next few slides that we're going to go through, that middle piece around the collaboration of those 3 personas, that is going to be consistent throughout the rest of today with regards to who performs what role, who performs what function. And it'll be key to understand that you need to engage that persona in that section. And hence why, you'll have these slides as a takeaway. You can have it, review them yourselves. But that was our thinking behind when we put these pieces together. Understand which persona performs which role in the particular phase that we're going through at the time.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so that slide that we have previously, right, gives you a high-level view. Well, what we've created, and this is brand new, that we've created with this set of content, I think you'll probably start to see showing up in a lot of other places. But we're using this through the course of the day to give you a deeper level click on what's going on with these processes. So to start off, right, on the bottom left corner, you may have dev, ops, or IT. This is kind of your person area, right? And then for every DevOps environment or the application lifecycle management, you're going to have some form of source code repository. We're intentionally at this phase not naming specific products, right? But you got to have your source code stored somewhere if you're going to collaborate. Next up, you're going to have to do building and testing of that software, right? That's going to have to happen in a lifecycle, obviously. And at some point, right, you're going to need to really do deployments of that software. And that deployment is going to live as an application somewhere, And that app could be on the cloud, it could be on premises. It really doesn't matter, but that's where, you know, in this framework, the application would live. And then last but not least, right, on the right-hand side, you're going to have operations, right? You're going to have the monitoring, the analysis being done of that application inside of the environment. And then on the bottom right-hand side, and this is really something that would transcend every element, is the process tools, right? Kind of things for helping you with change tracking, incident knowledge management, right? The slide we mentioned earlier with ITIL, right? There's some form of tracking change management system that you have. And we just put that on the bottom right just to kind of have a point of reference there. So, okay, so what does this look like on the open source ecosystem side of the house? Now, this is certainly not every single open source product software known to man, right? But it gives you an idea of some of the open source products that are out there in the market and kind of where they would fit. You know, obviously, like Jenkins, for instance, right? It's going to be in build and deploy because it's going to do continuous integration and deployments, right? You know, we have integrations with Chef and Puppet today, where you can deploy resources up to Microsoft Azure. And you know, this the idea here is that we don't at Microsoft want to tell you that you have to use 100% all Microsoft tools. Now, through the course of the day, between Morgan and I, that is going to be our focus, right? Because we do have a lot of tools that can help you. But we want you to realize that, you know, if you happen to be a heavy Chef shop or a heavy Puppet shop, or you love Nagios or whatever other open source software, there is the ability for you to kind of plug and play with these different technologies in the overall lifecycle, which is why we kind of helped you break it out here, right? So if you want to pick and choose different pieces for different areas or angles, you're welcome to do so. So let's click on the next slide here. And just so you know that slide originally, at least as far as the technologies there, came from our Microsoft Open Tech team. You know, they are the ones who are the experts on open source software. We have a full team dedicated to interoperability with these things. On a previous Ed show, we did an interview with Ross Gardler, who is the president of the Apache Foundation on the board, and he works at Microsoft, right? So we've got open source people that are there, and you know, we showed a demo of Chef provisioning Azure resources, right? So there's a lot of scenarios like that where, you know, even open source software interrelates with Microsoft technologies. You know, go to the blog there to kind of learn more in general about that.
So, I mean, you've given us a good view of the open source side and where it fits into this ALM, this framework that we've built together. Mm-hmm. If we now take one step forward in the slide and have a look at the actual Microsoft ecosystem, mm-hmm. and that'll be our focus for today, is where do our products fit into this? And alongside of that, where do we start to integrate with third-party products? So not just only our stuff. And we've had a few nice announcements that we'll go through today recently around on the public side. But looking at that graphics framework, we get to see where all the components sit. And as we go through each module, before we present or show any component, we'll position exactly where we are in those phases, in that life cycle. And then we'll explain which components we're using, how they integrate, how they get used. And ideally, that'll build us up for the end story at the end of the day to show where the pieces fit in and where you possibly might be involved if you're not involved across the end-to-end story. Because you possibly might only be focused on operations and monitoring in operations. You might not be part of provisioning. So little things like that will help at least define your product set, your skills, where you can fit in and where you would need to learn a bit more to provide more services to from a developer perspective. The Cloud OS is a massive push that we've had over the last good few years, since early 2012, really to frame what service are you accessing, where are you using, where are you storing, and we thought it'd be pertinent to actually just position that for a few minutes. The Cloud OS story, what those components are, and how we'd manage them from a central location. And the three key areas that we really care about is the customer, your own data center, a service provider, or the Microsoft Azure component. And maybe we can start off with the Azure component. Quick mm-hmm. understanding view of where we're at the moment, bit of a check.
Sure.
And then look at the rest after that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So for those of you who are not familiar with Microsoft Azure, I mean, that is our public cloud offering, right? We have quite a few data centers around the world. Those are continuing to evolve. And we invest billions of dollars in our data centers around the world. You know, there's... What we do, right, is we look for locations. We're always looking for new locations because our capacity, our demand is continuing to grow at an extremely large rate, right? But The idea here is that, you know, we have 24/7 365 support. We're in 89 markets worldwide. And the cool thing is, I mean, as far as our data centers go, I like to talk about, you notice that picture of that guy up there, right? So that's a grown man. He's probably, you know, 6 feet tall or so, right? And that next to him is a container. That container contains, on the picture on the other side there, a whole rack of servers, right? And the scale we operate in is we literally have a big old truck that takes that container, plops it down in a data center. That data center may even not have any overhead outside covering to it. It depends on the location in the world where it pulls in the outside air and cooling. But they drop that down, they plug in the power, they plug in the cooling, they plug in the network, nobody goes in there. And we have a process to automatically provision, you know, thousands of servers in that container. And no, and you know, that's the kind of level of scale of management that we have to operate at, right? You know, we have hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, more than millions of servers that are out there. So, you know, we have to operate at that scale to really achieve that. And so that's really hard for, you know, anybody that's not a you know, a Google, a Facebook, an Amazon kind of size of scale person to achieve, you know, in your own environment. So those are those cost savings that, you know, we're passing on to other folks that are out there today. So let's go back to the next slide. But what is Microsoft Azure, right? And we're not going to be talking about really all of these different components today. But just so you have an idea, right? Microsoft Azure is composed of a whole bunch of different services, right? You've got app services, data services, infrastructure services. And when you can put any really combination of those things together to make an application up. So in this case, for instance, we have Azure Virtual Machines. We combine that, let's say, with a virtual network and then have a VPN to connect that to our own data center, where in this particular case, right, you could think of Azure as an extension to your own data center. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to do VPN, you have to do a virtual network. Certainly, you could just use websites or just use a cloud service and not have it directly connect your data center, and that's fine, right? But this gives you an idea of, I mean, a high level overview, right, of all the different types of things that you could do with Microsoft Azure, and diving into all these components is really outside of the scope of the day. So we're going to give you, you know, just like kind of some of the specific services that relate to DevOps, but we're not going to really dive deep into any of those technologies.
Yeah, I mean, we have quite a bit of content on MVA dealing with those particular pieces in play. So if we look at the public cloud piece, which David went through now, and we look at Microsoft Azure, we also have the localized version for infrastructure as a service. Mm-hmm. So either in your data center or a service provider's data center where you're a customer, the ability to actually provision infrastructure out as a service, but be a bit more localized, a bit more customized based on the flavor that you might want. And there's two components to that, is the admin portal and the relevant tenant portal for your customers that might actually want to give access to and create their own subscriptions and configure and deploy out. If you click one more slide onto that piece, so taking that orange piece at the bottom around the fabric, so looking at networking, looking at compute, looking at storage, dropping down the Windows Azure pack above that, so leveraging Windows Server and System Center to give you that infrastructure that you can actually start to carve up and provision out to be used either internally to your developers or to actual customers that you might be hosting on the other side. If we move one more piece further on the slides, that view that you see there at the moment is a view of two portals. The existing infrastructure service portal on Microsoft Azure, which hasn't quite been updated to the new flavor just yet. And then on the right-hand side, the actual experience that a tenant or IT admin would get when he would log in and configure and use. So we've tried to keep the experience as similar as possible across all three areas. And that's a unique advantage for us in the market, is that we can take care of on-premises, we can take care of public, and we can take care of service provider. So as a user, as an administrator, as a developer accessing some of these services to use, the experience, the look and feel is kind of consistent, which obviously makes it easy to support, look after, but it also makes it easier for us to start integrating all those components. So great, we've looked at Azure, we've looked at Azure Pack, and we kind of understand the data center, the infrastructure. But how do we start to look at managing all of that? And that is where the unified management from Microsoft becomes very key. If we look at the System Center stack, the current version of 2012 R2, again, we've tried to map it back to the same framework that we've been discussing since the start. And we've slotted in the relevant components out of the System Center product and where they play a key role. And it really is key to understand it's a life cycle from beginning to end. So in the bottom left-hand side, the two personas, the developer and ops guy, and to an extent the business person, depending on what the process actually is, they access and use and leverage all of those components in a life cycle, from provisioning infrastructure to actually consuming it, to monitoring it and back again for the next iteration, next version, possibly expansion out from public into also from private into public, and having a hybrid scenario. So that is our key tool going forward that we will use from a unified management across the CloudOS system. Mm-hmm. If we take now and kind of finish off this closing section and focus on the piece that's going to be for each of the modules that we go through now. We, for really simplicity around how the products work from an explanation perspective, we kind of will have an on-premises section, we'll have a cloud section, and then a hybrid discussion across both of those depending on your scenarios. So giving you a full view of where all the components tie together from Microsoft, where the third-party pieces slot in alongside that and integrate with our tool sets. But we will stick to this graphic slide throughout the rest of the day. And it will be used more and more from TechEd North America going forward and the future courses that we will be start using at the Microsoft Virtual Academy. So this slide that you see here focuses purely on premises, looking at source control, looking at the management side for developers, the testing components, and then moving across to when I get my app out through release into a location where my app is stored, whether it be private cloud, whether it be public cloud, or whether it be both. And then the operations piece, and again, to close off at the end of the day, to allow us to keep a full view of what's going on all the way through all four of those phases, kind of from an end-to-end perspective. So that's the on-premises look and feel, and we'll see that slide a lot more through the rest of today's content. And maybe we can just flick across and go and give us a view of the cloud slide.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to also point out that, you know, we don't expect you at this phase to understand all of what's going on in those slides. We're going to break it down for you so you know what's happening there. But this is just kind of almost like a pseudo agenda, so to speak, of some of the technologies between Morgan and I that we're going to show. Morgan's going to continue on the track of on-premises only. I'm going to continue on the track of a cloud-only scenario. But as we mentioned, right, we have quite a few hybrid scenarios that you're able to do, but we're just not going to really cover those in any form of depth. It's going to be a really high level on the hybrid, because it does get more complex when you start introducing hybrid scenarios inside of your environment. So in this case, right, we have, you know, a number of different cloud technologies. It's certainly not all comprehensive of the things you can use from a cloud-only perspective, but I'll show you, you know, explain some of these different technologies as in the future decks here. So what are some of the key takeaways here, right? We want you to really help you enable you to get engaged in the DevOps conversation, right? Ideally, after you attend this jumpstart, we'd hope that you'd be able to start some conversations with your business and your development team, maybe even start to spin up a DevOps team for a particular project inside of your organization with the people that are there. And we also would like you to have a little better understanding of where some of the Microsoft products play a role in DevOps, right? So you're not going to understand the depth of all of the products, but you're going to kind of have a rough idea, hopefully, of what you could do with those products at a high level. And then also, we hope to give you some resources that would allow you to go deeper on some of these things. And I also want to make sure that you know, this is really the foundational course for the future of DevOps for ops professionals or IT professionals, right? You can expect more courses down the road, diving in more specifically and deeper on a number of these different components on the MVA site and possibly other live jump starts, right?
And so. I think you mentioned a good piece around going forward and this being the foundation. A great question was just posted on the chat by Constantine. So saying that traditionally the MVA has always been around consumption for developers, for IT pros. And this is that move. This is that change. Because the question is, shouldn't managers be included in this as well? And that is the change that we're going through at the moment. The invite, the sessions, the content is exposed and open to managers. It now becomes a matter of evangelizing that out to all three personas. So as IT pros, he has an event. As an IT manager, attend the same event to understand the life cycle that we're speaking about. Understand where do your developers fit into this for what the operations people are doing. And the same with developer events on the other side. Understand the tools, the products, the processes that they're using, and how their managers should be involved in that. So ideally, the business analyst should be really key involved across any sessions that we do have. And it's definitely not excluded from any perspective. They're definitely included. But this now is really the start for us as Microsoft first to evangelize out to all three personas. And then once, for example, attending something like this, ensure that your manager, your colleague, etc., attend the future ones. download the foundation one in about 2 weeks' time when it's ready, leverage it internally in your own enterprise, and then encourage people who you think this is pertinent to understand and view to get a view of this and actually play through the different modules that we have. And so slowly, those walls will be broken down, and we'll start to get this DevOps movement working slowly. And hence why we've said this is a kind of a journey from now through TechEd North America, almost all the way up to TechEd Europe, a good 4 or 5 months-ish, of putting out constant content focused on all these areas.
Yeah, and I want to point out too. I mean, us as a company, you know, we really are. You're going to see continue to see things evolve in this space, right? So, you know, definitely continue to. You know, it's not a DevOps is never a like I'm done thing, right? As you saw in the three ways, that continual experimentation, right? There's always new things to make it more efficient. But yeah, so we're going to go to a break now. And, you know, so just stay tuned. And up next, we're going to talk about the development module. So please come back after the break and definitely bring your questions. Let us know.